Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. I'm your host, Austin Peterson, here with a special guest today, a regular on the show, Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer. Colonel, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Austin. Good to be on.
Yep. Today is March the 17th. There's a story, a big story up on FoxNews.com that you wrote, Colonel. It's called Memo to GOP. Let's drill down on defense spending before we throw more money at the Pentagon. And you talk you begin it by telling the story about the little boy who cried wolf. Can you tell us what you mean by this allegory, sir? Who is crying wolf and why?
Well, there's several things at work here that people, I don't think, are really internalizing completely. I'm not saying we don't have threats. I mean, clearly, the whole idea of the metaphor is that when you tell the story about the boy who cried wolf, clearly there are wolves out there, because eventually in the story, the boy gets eaten by the wolf. What I'm saying is that you can't constantly be saying we need to spend more when we have yet to define exactly what we're spending more to achieve. And what I find totally ironic is that we've learned this lesson from overfunding the education, the federal education system. You know, throwing more money at big education didn't make anybody any smarter. It simply created bureaucracies from which, more layers of complexity arose. And as far as I can tell, no one is happy with the current state of our education system. So the same thing here. We're looking at a number of I would call them war hawks, if you will, who really are bound and determined to try to plus up the Pentagon's budget in big ticket items, which simply put, do not guarantee one American any more safety than simply going out and buying themselves a gun.
All right.
So I think we have to be very clear in our thinking, precise in our thinking about what we're trying to achieve regarding Pentagon spending before we try to increase Pentagon spending.
All right. Now, Colonel, you've always been very level-headed about this, and I know you consider yourself somewhat more of a Reagan-style conservative. Now, you're sort of throwing out the word war hawk here. It's to say that these are the people on the extreme of the debate. People who are on the extreme of the debate, people like Senator John McCain and Representative Mac Thornberry from Texas, they're calling for $78 billion more than the law is saying it should be. They want to punch up the Pentagon budget for $15 billion more than the president is asking for in
right.
his request. Now, obviously, the war hawks, as you say, are going to try and out-hawk the president. They want to sound tougher on terrorism, and they want to look like they support the troops more than the president. But this seems to be, not just extreme, but hyper-extreme in terms of their desire to spend taxpayer money on programs that you say are of negligible value to our national security. Is that the case?
That's correct. And let me be very clear on where I think a lot of the money is going to go. It's going to go to very large corporations. And one of those, a great Republican that I often quote is former President Eisenhower, who warned the American people in his final speech about the military-industrial congressional complex. And that's what we're seeing here at play. We're seeing essentially the machine of industry fueling the machine of politics coming together at a time when clearly, we have a smaller footprint of deployed troops overseas. We, for better or for worse, I don't want to get into the debate of the merits of the wars being over, but we've essentially, reduced our footprint in Iraq to the point of where we have about 3,000 troops there doing some level of training. We have about 10,000 troops in Afghanistan doing essentially offensive operations and training. So we no longer have 100,000 troops forward. So therefore, in my judgment, you can cut spending. You need to cut spending. And this pivot to Asia, so-called pivot to Asia, I still don't know what we're trying to do over there. And frankly, anybody I've talked to the Pentagon really doesn't know what we're doing either.
Well, you say in your piece there is no national security strategy. So then what are they doing trying to move towards Asia?
Well, that's exactly the point. They don't know what they're trying to do. They're trying to find justification for continued spending. And this is one of those things, Austin, I think both the libertarians and we Reagan Republicans can agree upon, is that, look, nobody is saying we shouldn't defend our interests. What we're saying is define what those interests are before you go about funding it. My boss, Dr. Herb London, was in a meeting a while back, and I'm not sharing anything that's classified here. Herb was actually asked to sit in on some of the debates regarding the Marine Corps' budget for FY 2015-2016. And during this debate, it was brought up that the Marine Corps does not want to take the 10% cuts that it's been given. And Hurt's question was, well, why don't you defend them then? What exactly are you doing then that says we should defend this? Why can't you take the 10%? So this is where, you know, we're looking at this clearly from a Reagan perspective. And for your audience who may not understand why I'm such a Reagan advocate, is that in 1987, the year after the completion of his buildup, based on his strategy, the approved strategy that they were working against the Soviet Union, they actually started a hiring freeze in DOD and lowering of defense costs. So think about this. Reagan himself and his team were able to start the downward spending, lowering the Pentagon budget, lowering the Pentagon personnel in 1987 after the so-called Reagan buildup was completed. So this is what I'm talking about here. If you're going to have a buildup, that's fine. Define what it is, sell it to the American people clearly so you can say this is what we're going to achieve to increase your security, and then go about justifying the spending. Right now, we are in an environment where the spending is unconstrained and the strategy is completely absent. And that's what we're saying here. We need to get the cart, the horse before the cart, figure out how to drive this thing properly. And simply put, we don't want to throw more money at it because we don't know what we're spending now. And giving more to DOD will only continue to the facade that somehow throwing money at them is making us safer.
Now, you say, according to the GAO assessment, more than half of the Pentagon's top weapons programs have increased in cost to the tune of $27 billion. This is what
right.
the Department of Energy spends in about a year, and half of the Department of Homeland Security's annual budget, which is absolutely enormous. I mean, is all this spending actually making us any safer, yes or no?
No, not at all. And again, this is where we need to tie these Pentagon programs, which, you know, they always talk about having a technology advantage. Well, you know, over what and who? You know, we have now banked on the idea of stealth being one of the big technologies we need to rely upon. Well, let me tell you something, Austin. The tests I'm aware of, the Navy actually could spot the F-35 every time it flew over a ship, the Aegis system, and they actually had to basically monkey with, down-tune the radars so that the quote-unquote stealth could work. So my problem is even the so-called large-ticket technology programs are being doctored to show success where there's not, and reliable programs which are tried and true, which are effective, which are necessary, like the A-10, are on the chopping block because the Air Force likes bright, shiny objects, and the A-10 is not bright and shiny.
All right. I'd like to discuss about this from an ideological perspective now. I'd like to
sure.
talk about what's going on in the Republican Party, because you're fully aware of what's going on with the ideologies of the party. There appears to be now the social conservatives appear to be on the retreat a bit. You know, there's a bit less interest from people like Rick Santorum. And of course, we always have the Bush legacy around that. These represent the neoconservatives, John McCain's, the more hawkish types. And the Reagan Republicans, there aren't really a lot of them still around, Colonel. There really aren't. And now there appears to be the libertarian wing, which is very ascendant. And the war hawks are on the attack against the libertarians, the people who I represent every single day. And the thing is, we seem to have more in common, you Reagan Republicans, with the libertarian that you do with the libertarians than you do with the war hawks anymore these days.
No doubt.
And so I wonder, you know, today there's this a new op-ed came out of from the Daily Dot and the Federalist, and they're talking about the what's happening with the growth of they call populist libertarianism in the party. And of course, you know, we get penned as isolationists and all of that. You know certainly that I am not.
Right.
And I'm much more hawkish than I think a lot of my anarchist friends, of course. but what I want to know is would you fear a Rand Paul presidency on national security? Well, if there were a changing of power, Colonel, meaning that there was wrested away from the Republican Party, that the old guard, the neoconservative Republicans, were sort of, I wouldn't say totally washed away, but perhaps put on the back bench for a while. And we saw a coalition of Reagan Republicans and libertarian conservatives, you know, a little more hardcore, perhaps, leftist libertarian types such as myself, libertinists, were to put together a coalition. Would you feel comfortable with them on a national security posture?
No doubt.
Do you think that the American people would feel comfortable?
Yes, I do. And let me explain why. Look, what you're saying has great merit. And one of the things that even my good friend and mentor, General Tony Zinni, has said in his latest book, that because we have built such a complex and in-depth military complex, something that's so large and so effective in its tactical application of force, politicians are apt to overuse it. So I am quite confident, based on my experience, based on our record, that if we have to go and use kinetic force, we can do so. So this is where I think we need to look at restraint and understand how we need to use non-lethal methods of dealing with those we consider either friends, adversaries, or competitors. I think we're too apt to pick up a club and go hit someone over the head with it. And I think this was a great lesson of the Reagan years. When the Beirut bombing happened in 83, Reagan's response was not to double down and say, "We're going to go get those folks who got us. We're going to deploy more
And he didn't
troops."
create Guantanamo Bay.
Right. But we did eventually, through clandestine methodology and special operations, kill the Iranians who were responsible. We got them eventually, but it didn't require Austin a land army of 100,000 troops to go do that. So I'm saying we I'm not saying we
Understood,
shouldn't.
understood, Colonel. But I want to talk. I want to focus on the ideology here, because from a
Sure.
tactical perspective, I think our audience understands. I mean, from a political perspective, where are all of you guys? Where are the Reagan Republicans? You're gone. I mean, your numbers are dwi have dwindled. I mean, they sure as hell are friendly to us libertarians, usually, but only now because you need. I say you, but I mean the coalition of people, like the Leadership Institute. They want the young people who came to this party through the ideas of liberty and non-aggression, libertarianism. They want our energy, but they don't want our ideas, Colonel. And so what happens, unfortunately, is that I feel like the establishment, who wants to spend this money, who wants to, they're just going to roll us into office, another George W. Bush. We're going to get another 8 years of compassionate conservatism, and there will be no spending cuts. I mean, Rand Paul's talking about auditing the Pentagon, for God's sakes. I
Right.
mean, we need to come out from the wilderness, because God damn it, we're going to get eaten by wolves out here, Colonel. How do we get it? How do we get in? How do we solve this problem? How do
We
we
got
beat the bad guys in the Republican Party?
two years to get ourselves organized, and I think this should be a call to arms for both of our sides to start working more readily together. And I know a few Reagan Republicans who are my friends and mentors, and look, I think we ought to have some sort of an open dialogue on this very issue.
We need a national security debate amongst our people.
Absolutely. I mean, at CPAC, I hope you don't mind if you caught my speech. I actually kind of called out the libertarians and said, "Look, there are threats we have to actually face here." But at the same time, I opened by saying, we cannot afford to continue to spin blindly. So I think there's room in the party for a healthy debate. And frankly, for those thinking conservatives, I think they will recognize that libertarian and Reagan thoughts are really the way we should go, rather than simply trying to double and triple down on
Right.
spending
Well, Colonel,
without understanding what we're going to do.
you know that I'm not the typical head in your sand, an isolationist type. I understand there are threats that we have to face, and there are things that are going to require a first world military to solve.
Right.
My thing is, you have to speak first before you strike. It seems to me that from a tactical position, that there, like you say, there is no strategic plan, and so our national security interests are not served. So it makes sense that there would be a radical reaction on the right when you have radicalism such as that which you've detailed here in this piece by Thornberry and by McCain.
Right.
So don't why should they be surprised? Why should the Republicans be surprised to see the youth uprising now being one of more of having a more peaceful mindset? It reflects what the American people want.
Well, I think this is where, when I first started talking national security, I was in my late teens and 20s, and this is the beginning of the Reagan Revolution. So I think young people can come around to understand for themselves what's important. And again, I think the dialogue and having a place for them to actually feel comfortable in saying what they believe and actually having people open to it is very important. And so, here I am all these years later, and I still feel the same way I did in 83, that we need to have a healthy understanding of adversary, a clear way of dealing with this politically. And frankly, I think the libertarian side of this, with a kind of a reinvigorated Reagan Republican side, needs to have this dialogue. And frankly, part of the thing, what we have to do is actually pull this Reagan mantle away from the neocons who constantly cite Reagan.
Right.
as the reason what they're doing. Reagan would not have approved of most of their
No,
methodology.
he was not bloodthirsty. He was
No.
not a, he was not a warmonger.
Right.
Well, you know, Colonel, I think a lot of libertarians, I can speak for a lot of libertarians, not all of them, but when I say that, you know, I think a lot of us would sleep better at night if we thought that people like you were in control of the Pentagon. So maybe if we get Rand Paul in office, we can get you in as a Department of Defense chief. But that's something we'll have to talk about at a later time. Colonel,
Well, thank you.
thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you. Anytime, Austin.